It is Saturday, September 27th, 2014. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio, 88.9 and KUSP.org. And ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for Geek Speak. Well, welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or any of the geeks' affiliated organizations. And I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch in the host chair today. With me in the studio is Ben Jaffe, teacher, traveler, and total space nerd.
Total space nerd.
You're so nerdy for space.
How are you?
I'm good. I feel extra peppy this morning for no discernible reason.
Ooh.
And we also have with us Miles Elam, a software engineer and political junkie.
Good morning.
I take that back. It's because I beat my honey at playing Ingenious today. There, that's why.
Ingenious?
Ingenious? Have you heard of that game?
No.
There's a
board game?
It's a board game, but there's a phone app too. And there's a bunch of hexagonal tiles, double hexagonal tiles with different colors and shapes on them. And you try to have the most of them by playing off of other people trying to get the most of them. And you try to prevent them from getting the most of them. And I like most about the game is that your least strong color is your score. So you're only good as your weakest link.
Oh.
It's kind of cool. Anyway, there we go. That's a fun game. Ingenious. Look it up at your app store.
I played a fun game too, but I couldn't tell you the name of it because it's a game heavily modified by a friend of mine.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like this game that's originally kind of centered around mysticism and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And my friend, someone on the internets, turned it from mysticism into scientific methodologies. And instead of the shaman, there's the science, you test it against the scientific method. And
this rule is
consistent with the laws of nature or, any of that, all that stuff.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. If I can find a name of it, I will tell all of you guys about it.
Okay.
That was fun.
All right. Yeah.
Played that yesterday.
That reminds me of the science tarot deck that a friend of mine made.
Is that pterodactyl related?
No, it's related to the tarot.
Oh, tarot.
But they use scientific principles to illustrate the symbology of the tarot. It's very clever.
Oh, that's interesting.
Science tarot. Look for it at a museum store near you. Hi, Miles.
Hi.
Have you been playing any games lately?
None that...
Chutes and Ladders, maybe?
Yeah, only that a two-and-a-half-year-old
would
game.
Like.
No, I have not played Chutes and Ladders, but we do play the Big Bounce game.
What's that?
It's where I grab both of my daughter's arms and lift her up in the air over and over again while she squeals.
Yeah, so analog games, that's what you play.
Yes, very much so.
Some of those are just perennial favorites. And another sort of gamery, a bunch of electric car drivers got together in Cupertino last week hoping to...
Yeah, I heard about that.
...break the Guinness World Record for largest amount of electric vehicles gathered in one spot. And apparently the previous record was like 481...
That's a lot.
That's a lot of cars. And it was in Stuttgart, Germany.
So electric vehicles, not cars, right?
Vehicles, right. There's motor cars there. Some people were doing kind of like two-wheeled stuff, three-wheeled stuff, four-wheeled stuff. Anyway, they had to disqualify some folks because they weren't totally electric. Like you can't...
Oh, like they had
pedal
another...
Pedal power doesn't count.
Oh,
they were being strict.
Wow.
They were being strict because they wanted it to be a real record. And in fact, they made it anyway with 507 cars. Yay.
Wow.
So we'll have a video about that up at the
vehicles.
Vehicles. Yes. At geekspeak.org. So congratulations, electric car and other vehicle owners.
Woohoo.
Yeah. Speaking of transportation, DHL drone delivery service.
Do you remember back in December when Amazon announced that it was intending at some point in the future to deliver packages using drones?
Yeah.
And we covered it on the show, and we were all excited about it.
I thought it was going to be like Amazon or somebody doing that.
Right. And and it turns out, of course, that there were all kinds of FAA restrictions and everything. So they weren't saying like, hey, we're going to do this now. Mm-hmm. They were saying, hey, we want to do this, but we need to work with the FAA and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So it turns out that the German delivery firm DHL.
Those Germans. First Stuttgart, now this.
Yeah, they have won in the race, actually. And this is not for delivering things to your door. This is things specifically...
To German's doors.
Well, to specifically the German island of Juist, or Juist, which is a sandbar. It's 12 kilometers into the North Sea from the German coast.
Just, how do you spell that for...
J-U-I-S-T.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are 2,000 people on that little sandbar island.
Uh-huh.
And, like, how do you deliver something to an island? Well, a drone would be a wonderful way to do it.
Yeah.
And apparently they don't have the same kinds of restrictions, at least for
over
that particular...
Sea or something? Or yeah, for that particular piece of airspace?
That use case. And also, yeah. They're also keeping the drones below 50 meters, and that avoids, air traffic corridors that are regulated.
That's clever. They just have to worry about getting snapped up by leaping...
Oh, yeah, the
marine predators.
There was this crazy... Actually, I think I covered this on Geek Speak, too, but I don't remember when it was. It was like a year ago.
Yeah.
There was a bird flying, and then a fish jumps out of the sea and eats it.
Uh-huh.
And it's captured on video. I'm going to have to Google this now, and I'll Google it to find it on geekspeak.org. And then I'll tell you when that was. But
okay.
that was a crazy video.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this won't be all deliveries. This will just be things that are urgently needed, like medications and things like that.
So it's a way to work around the awkward remote deliveries.
Yeah.
Use a drone.
And you don't even have to talk to anyone.
That's great.
Just drops it.
If I'm
and
on
leaves.
An island, buzz off, really. I mean, what's the message there?
But how does the drone collect your signature?
Maybe it's holding like a little, it's got just like a little mechanical claw.
Please sign here.
Yeah. It's, piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And it goes, bzz, bzz. Maybe it has like a little compartment in its belly.
So we're just completely making that part up.
I'm making that part up.
But drone deliveries are a reality for a very small subset of the world, which
is
kind of cool.
If you've been thinking of moving to Juist, then you're good. Or however it's pronounced.
That the 2,000 number, that's population spike.
Yeah.
Everyone's moving to that.
Everyone's like, dang, I want some of that. Miles, I see here that you'd like to talk about shell shock, and I just don't even know what that is.
Well, first we had Heartbleed.
We're talking about viruses.
I just want to. So I don't have to remember. Yeah. That was 2014, January 18th. We talked about the crazy fish with the sharp teeth eating the bird.
So if you want to see that, look up the January 18th show for 2014.
Yeah.
There.
All right.
Step saving device.
First we had Heartbleed, which was a server vulnerability where it would start reading random bits of memory until it got some passwords.
There was insufficient blood in your impression, Ben.
Oh.
That's good. Okay. Please proceed, Miles.
Are you sure you want me to do this story? You guys seem to be having a lot of fun.
What's your impression with shell shock? Okay, sorry.
Shell shock, on the other hand, is something that is done on the command line. It refers to a vulnerability in the born-again shell, also known as bash.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is that this vulnerability was introduced in the code in 1992.
Oh, so this is old. It's been around for a while.
Yes.
And just nobody has found it so far?
Well,
or nobody has publicized
it? In 92, most Unix systems weren't running Bash as their primary shell.
It wasn't a problem back then.
Right. And now Bash has found its way into many Unix systems like FreeBSD and just about every flavor of Linux.
Mm-hmm.
There are even versions that are available for Windows. And basically, if you're running a Mac, you're running Bash.
Okay.
Unless you've done something explicitly to change that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
not just Macs as well. A lot of machines have Bash running.
But all Macs is one. That's what
all Macs.
It allows access to the main system just by being able to invoke that shell. So if you're on the system at all, if you have a user account or whatever, you're able to get ownership of that machine.
Ooh.
Just breaks right on through.
Okay.
Then you lose control of your machine.
But for what purpose is shell shock gaining control of your machine?
Oh, well, anytime that there is a bug, and especially things such as this, a privilege escalation bug. In other words, where you're no longer a normal user, you are now the root user, a super user.
Uh-huh.
It allows someone who is taking advantage of this bug to install a rootkit or to install software onto your machine that you don't necessarily want, or to put on other types of malware like a keylogger or something like that, something that can gather passwords or things like that. And it is a extremely serious vulnerability because of the number of machines that are affected by it. Yeah. And apparently they are starting to see exploits in the wild, although it doesn't look like there were really exploits prior to it being publicized. So it doesn't necessarily look like people have been using it nefariously and unknown to authorities in general.
Right. Okay. So far, not so bad?
Well, it's going to get bad really soon. So running a Linux machine, or if you're on a Windows machine and you're running Bash, you already know what I'm talking about and you need to patch. Yeah. If you're on a Linux machine or on a Mac, especially all you Mac users that are very snide about, like, oh, I don't need to worry about viruses, I've got a Mac.
Yeah, that was true.
If you see,
some time ago.
If you see a notice saying, hey, there's an update available.
Do the update.
Do it.
Okay. They're trying to take care of you.
This is not you might happen to come across a problem if you're running QuickTime in this particular scenario. This is a serious one. So
this is a serious one. So
whenever
next
you
update,
see an update, do it.
Okay. All right.
And we'll post up some information on the website for how you can test to see if you have the vulnerability.
Oh, that'll be good. So check that out at geekspeak.org. And Apple's been in the news for other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about that iCloud vulnerability? You want to talk about that, Ben?
Oh, yeah. Well, the part I want to talk about is that they knew about the vulnerability. This is the one that led to a bunch of photos of iCloud users being leaked online. Mm-hmm. And Apple knew about this vulnerability allegedly as early as March 2014, according to some leaked emails, which is pretty bad. Like, you know, if a company discovers a vulnerability like that, they need to patch it very, very quickly, you know, before anyone learns about it. The vulnerability allows you basically to try a whole bunch of passwords combinations pretty quickly rather than, you know, you try two or three passwords and then it says, you know what? Why don't you stop trying passwords? I'm not going to let you in or say, no, the password is incorrect. I'm just going to, you know, block you for a little while is what the system would say.
Why don't all systems do that?
A lot of systems do. It seems like a really good
fail-safe. I don't run across that very often. Tumblr just lets me keep guessing and guessing. I can never remember what my...
Well, it depends upon the service and it depends on what your target audience is. Some of them are general purpose where people are not technically savvy at all. Mm-hmm. And so forgetting your password is a common thing. And if you only try it three times and you're locked out of your account, suddenly...
Then people get too frustrated to use your service.
Well, suddenly you don't have any users of your service.
Yeah.
Because you don't
Forget
have...
it, Ben.
Because a lot of these companies don't have the infrastructure to be able to field phone calls to be able to unlock an account.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
The other thing is there's a big difference between, you know, you try a password. Oh, that didn't work. Okay, what could it be? You try another password. There's about 3-4 seconds in between each try at minimum. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the difference between that and allowing someone to try 10 passwords a second or more, you know, like that's a big difference. So there probably are a lot of safeguards involved in systems where you don't see it say like, no, you tried too many times. The safeguards probably are there. It's just more difficult for you as a human being to trigger them.
Yeah.
Even a while ago with a lot of systems, like for example, we had this set up on the GeekSpeak server a little while back where if you tried a login, it would, if you got a successful login, it would let you write in. Mm-hmm. If you failed a login, it would wait a second and then ask you again. You try logging it again. And if you failed again from the same IP address, same location, it would wait 2 seconds. And then fail again 4 seconds, and fail again 8 seconds, and then 16.
So it gets less and less fun to try again.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if you're a human being and you have to try 3 times, you know, even if you have to wait 16 seconds, usually it's like, okay, well, I'm trying on my 4th time, and okay.
Fifth time, sorry.
Yeah.
But if you...
get the math right, don't get it wrong.
Yes.
this is important stuff.
2 to the N+1, yes.
Yeah.
There we go.
But... but if you're an automated service where you're just trying to try passwords, that number gets very large very quickly, to the point where, maybe it's not worth it for me to wait another year before I try another attempt, and then they move on to the other to another server.
Oh, okay. Oh, so that's clever.
A large part of it is just about not being the lowest hanging fruit. So if there are, let's say, 100 services that, as a hacker, you're deciding between, you're going to choose the one of the ones that's the easiest. You're not going to choose the hardest one, unless it has data that you want and the other services don't count, you know, but or don't have that data. So
that's
anyway.
Good. Don't be the lower, the lowest hanging fruit.
And that actually goes for passwords too. You know, like it's a really good, it's really important to have a good password set. But if you really don't want to go through the effort to have a good password set,
just don't have the worst one.
At least don't have the worst one. At the very least. Don't set your password to password. Don't set your password to...
Yeah, you know what? I used to believe in that advice, but what it comes down to is the lowest hanging fruit is not one or two people that are the lowest hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The lowest hanging fruit is, you know...
You're talking larger chunks of lowest hanging fruit.
Right, is 500 million users, and then you have another set that have good passwords. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, either set up two-factor authentication or use something like 1Pass, you know, to 1Password to give you something much stronger, or spend the time to figure out a really.
But if all of that seems really like never mind, I'm not going to do it. At least set your password to 3 unrelated or 4 unrelated words back to back. That's so much better than what you probably have.
Yeah, I just was giggling because I thought, God, what would we like to have just a compendium, like one of those supercuts of all the various password advice that's been given on this show over time.
It'd probably be very redundant and repetitive too.
Which is why you'd want to do some really tight editing on that one.
What was that XKCD one, horse battery staple?
You're listening to Geek Speak here on KUSP. Another fine program is the 7th Avenue Project, which airs Sundays at noon on 88.9, or as a podcast from the talk section of KUSP.org. Every week, Robert talks with a bright mind in the arts or sciences, and we all get to listen in. It's always a good conversation at the 7th Avenue Project, Thinking Persons Radio with Robert Pauly. Reminder, that's tomorrow at noon or on KUSP, or check out his website at 7thAvenueProject.com for hours and hours of good listening. So we hope this can be at least 1 hour of good listening for you. Geekspeak.org today. That's the show, Geekspeak. And we're talking about Apple stuff. There's more Apple stuff to talk about as regards the iPhone.
There's a lot of Apple news. It's strange. It just was, it came out about a week ago that Apple sold over 10 million new iPhones in their first 3 days.
That seems like a lot of phones to me. I'm just going to offer that as a layperson.
Over 10 million Gumby iPhones.
Now, Gumby, because some of them were bendy, right?
Well, that's what a lot of people were claiming. A lot of people were saying, hey, wait a second, when I sit on my phone, it bends in this crazy way, and it looks like it's going to break and snap and all this stuff.
Yeah,
and so
people were concerned.
Yeah, there's kind of a whole uproar about that. Yeah. And
At geekspeak.org, later we're going to have just like a Google image search of iPhone 6 bending.
Yeah,
you'll see all the different ways that
Consumer
works.
Reports actually covered this.
Yes.
Well, they did, and doing it the way they do it, just like really extensive testing, not just iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus, but also iPhone 5, like an HTC phone, like a bunch of different phones.
So they actually, they did a comparison themselves and tried to bend these phones and...
And took the measurements for how much weight was required or how much force was required.
Yeah, yeah. So this sounds like something you've read up about, Miles. Do you know what the pressure point was when that started to break?
I believe for the iPhones it was about 70 pounds.
70 pounds to bend, yeah. And what, like over 100 pounds, or maybe it was around 100 pounds of pressure for it to actually separate from the case. 110. Yeah.
100 and 110 for the, I think, is what we were looking at before the show, for the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6S.
Yeah,
6, whatever.
6 Plus.
6 Plus.
Yeah, 6 Extra. Yeah. And both of those, I guess, were higher than Apple said they would be, so kind of not a real problem.
Well, they are amounts that you wouldn't expect to snap. At the same time, I have... I have mixed feelings about that Consumer Reports model because they were talking about the amount of force necessary is equivalent to if you had four pencils in your hand and you try to break them all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a fair amount of force.
That takes effort.
Yes, it does.
How are people sitting down with the iPhone in their back pocket?
So I can imagine four pencils in my back pocket taped together so they stay together. And then sitting down and breaking it because there's leverage there and my entire body weight.
Exactly.
But if you try and break it with your fingers, I mean, like, you're probably not gonna be able to break the iPhone with your fingers unless you're really, really strong and you try really hard. So it's kind of apples and oranges, right?
I get it.
Apples and lemons?
Apples and bananas.
Apples and bananas.
Before the show, we were talking about banana phone.
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool, actually, to have a bent phone just the right way, because then it would kind of like...
If it stays bent,
If it stays bent, it'd be like, you know...
Hello.
Banana phone.
And in fact...
I'm holding a banana right now.
I see that you're holding a banana. Right
just there. For those That's of adorable. Us who aren't in the air room.
Picture, if you will, Ben holding a banana.
Yeah.
To his head.
Bottom line is, if you wear skinny jeans and you have your phone in your back pocket, you might have a bad day.
It's possible.
You know, before I knew about the Consumer Report test, I was trying to imagine how this would happen. Because they said, you know, hey, we did the pocket test over at Apple and nobody's phone bent, so what's your deal? And I thought, oh, well, maybe the testers had just a lot of soft bottoms. And then once people who, like, bicycled a lot or something... little hard bottoms.
You know, you'd be surprised.
Be more likely to bend a phone.
If you drive around Cupertino, so many bicyclists.
That's true.
And a lot of them work at Apple.
Okay, all right.
But maybe not in the mobile testing department.
Maybe not. We don't know.
That said, I believe the story is overblown.
It's
officially.
It is not very. It is not at all like iPhone 4 when it was released and what they call Antenna Gate. Word, if you held your finger
gate,
yeah, if you held your fingers at the gap, which was a very natural place to hold it, suddenly you didn't have any reception on your phone. That affected so many people, mm-hmm. and this one not so much. At the same time, it's you can break your phone, but one thing that they did find with the Consumer Reports thing is. Even though when they put in 70 pounds and you heard a little bit of a snap,
mm-hmm.
That wasn't actually the phone breaking.
What was it?
That was the glue coming loose on the screen.
Oh.
And when they took it out again, they could snap it right back in again. It took a lot more force to cause the phone to stop working.
Hmm.
Well, so that's it. Your phone still works.
Yes.
Don't worry about it. Does your phone work? Great. This is a different shape than I thought.
But then again, who knows? Apple is all about, you know, driving fashion. Like, think about the white earbuds for the earphones.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Will subsequent phones be purposefully bendy?
Well, I was actually thinking along the lines of, with this, is it going to, when you have an Apple product where Apple says, like, hey, we're cool.
Yeah.
Are people going to adapt their lifestyles to that? Whereas before, people used to hide the headphones. Now, and then iPod came out and it became a badge of a fashion to have the white earbuds,
uh-huh.
even though they were exceedingly mm-hmm. uncomfortable and not uh-huh. very high quality.
Or now the colored cord of the Beats,
right.
Beats headphones.
Or is it now going to be, oh, hey, cargo pants, they're back in style for everyone.
Which was the skinny jeans problem I had a couple of seasons ago. Dead, burn it.
There's one other thing that's happening with the iPhones. It's that there's been this little thing going around saying, basically telling people, hey, there's this new iOS 8 exclusive feature called Wave. And it says Wave can be used to quickly charge your device's battery using any standard household microwave. That is not true.
What?
Just to be 100% clear. If you see anything claiming that you can microwave your phone and charge it within a minute and a half, that's wrong.
Or rather, if you see anything that says you can microwave your phone without your phone dying within
the
first
15 seconds.
Yeah, I
want to see that Consumer Reports test.
Exactly. If you microwave your phone, it will break your phone and possibly your microwave.
If you put your phone in the microwave, you're going to have a bad time.
Also, your poodle don't put in there.
Yes.
But do gremlins.
But gremlins, yes. Gremlins, yes. Poodles, no. iPhones,
if you need
no.
to charge your gremlins?
Yeah. Well, it's... If you wind up feeding them after midnight, then just stuff them in a microwave.
I just had a realization.
What?
You didn't get that reference, did you, Ben?
Oh, what? Microwave the gremlins?
Yeah.
Maybe not.
I
oh, no.
No,
BB King. Feeling old.
No. I know there's a reference that I've encountered before that involves Gremlins. Yeah.
I know culturally I'm supposed to refer to Gremlins, but I've never seen the movie.
I have seen that movie, but I don't remember anything from it.
Well,
in the classic film Gremlins, which incidentally was a PG-rated film and was one of the reasons why PG-13 was created.
Oh.
One of the ways they killed the evil gremlins that were trying to hurt everyone was they stuffed it into a microwave.
And then I'm sure there was explosion scenes.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I've definitely seen this movie.
He looked it up.
I just looked it up.
You've totes seen that movie.
I've totes seen that movie, lol.
Lol.
And,
Ruffle.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, we settled that. The baby geek is allowed to stay in the group.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, you're welcome. Speaking of being inclusive versus exclusive, Miles, you heard something rather shocking.
While on a American Airlines flight, some folks were looking for a place to stay.
Mm-hmm.
People, you know, Airbnb is very popular, but not everyone is friendly with all members of our society.
Yeah.
And one group in our society that tends to have problems when traveling are our LGBT friends.
Really? They're having trouble? Is it because they're wearing turbans?
And so it has become a thing that you can look up a site like Mr. B&B instead of Airbnb.
Okay.
That provides an Airbnb type service, but specifically that it's a gay friendly place to stay.
Okay.
In other words, they're not going to at the last minute go, wait, you're gay? No, you can't stay in my place. And then you're left in a lurch.
So some businesses are choosing to sort of have as part of their brand identity queer friendly.
Right.
Yeah.
And also that notion of let's find a safe place. And so on American Airlines, which has in-flight Wi-Fi now, provided by a company called GoGo, some folks decided to, I'm going to look at MrBnB.com and I'm going to, you know, try to find a place to stay. And they were given an error page that says web page blocked. Access to the page you were trying to go to is blocked, and the reason being category adult and pornography.
Really? So queer means obscene?
Or gay, yeah. And this is something that reminds me of when I worked for a content filtering company.
Uh-huh.
And some of the things that we struggled with, which is, unfortunately, in our society, if you are a company that does blocking, you are going to get bug reports from a non-trivial number of customers saying anything having to do with the LGBT community should be adult and or porn or considered in that category.
Because it ain't right, according to some.
And to the credit of the company that I worked for, they were like, no, many times it's culture, many times it's social.
Mm-hmm. Broader context of awareness there with the company you worked for.
And with categorizing any types of websites, it's going to be a very gray area. Not all websites fit into the box, just like not all music fits into a nice, neat little box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, American Airlines themselves were going, wait a second, why is this site blocked?
So who blocks the site? Is it American Airlines? Is it
No,
is
it's
it
the company
GoGo?
They were going through, which is GoGo. Now the question is, and
so it wasn't American Airlines saying, oh, nope, you're not allowed to
American Airlines isn't in the Wi-Fi business. They're not in the telecommunications business.
But
they're
provide
in the
okay.
So they pay a company to provide that service. So this happens all the time.
Yeah, okay. And
so,
a lot of airlines have partner with that particular company
as well.
Third-party
vendor problem.
Right, airports don't know how to set up Wi-Fi and set up networks.
That
so
makes sense to me.
They contract with AT&T or T-Mobile or any of the other companies. That
and so was it the company that they contracted to making the decision?
Right.
Okay, so now what? Now that they figured that out, now what?
Well, there's the question. Because they may be able to unblock that particular site, or it depends upon what the policies are on there. But the fact that sites like this are being categorized in this way means that even if it is a service made for safety, which is basically what this boils down to, comfort and safety, you're going to fall into the wrong bucket more often than not. And this is where tech issues, you know, really dovetail into social issues, where someone's personal preference can't really decide. I mean,
yeah, you can't decide for everybody.
It can and it does, but it shouldn't.
Right.
Says we.
Well, at the same time, you have there are churches, and I don't necessarily agree with the policy, but you have religious organizations that say, we don't want any of this coming in. That's why we got filtering software, because we don't want any of this in.
Yeah, yeah.
So
they can have filtering software then.
But how do you block that if it's all under – if you have some stuff that's under social –
Yeah.
Or under community or something like that.
So filtering for personal use, but not if you're deciding for other consumers. That's my verdict. Judge Bonnie has spoken.
Right. But you have when you have a company like GoGo, their client is American Airlines and also the religious organization and also the community organization.
Okay.
So it's
like car companies having to make catalytic converters for those states that require them to be there, even though they're not required everywhere.
Right.
And being in that uncomfortable place of sort of kowtowing and making specialized products for all everyone's different preferences.
It's even worse than that. It's as if some states require them to be there and some states
require them not to be
their
there.
Use. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's
say,
more
no, that's not okay. You know, so.
Tense, awkward. Well, I hope they'll figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. This is
glad
this
I don't have that job.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is one of the problems where, you know, technology meets social. And this is also one of my thought processes for morality in tech, because there are a lot of folks that choose, well, I don't want to get into a particular area of business. And this is not just tech, this is everything.
But sure.
Because there are moral questions involved. There's a moral gray area, and I'm not comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And if you are a person of ethics, that you actually are trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
You need to go into those gray areas. You need to go and occupy that space. Because
that's where all the action is.
Well, that's where all the new stuff is happening, where you're trying to blaze those trails. Mm-hmm. But if you don't go into those areas, if you and people like you that are trying to do the right thing.
If your influence is not present in those areas.
If you're not there trying to make the right moral decision, you're going to end up with people who aren't as concerned about it filling that void.
Or people who feel oppositely.
Or people who just don't care about the ethics of it. They're just looking for the business opportunity.
Okay.
And so this is my soapbox of, like, if you have a moral standing and there's an area that you feel uncomfortable, it doesn't necessarily mean you need to get out of that space.
It could be an interesting area for self-awareness practice, at the very least.
Something that I've noticed is the more you know about a particular topic, the more uncomfortable you feel taking a very clear stance about issues that are gray areas, right?
See, and we're getting into a juicy topic here. This is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it seems. I mean, like, just looking at my own personal development in high school, I had opinions. I had a lot of opinions, and I would state them, and I would state them as fact. And all the adults around me would just be, you know, just not really say much, and just let me say whatever I said, and then the conversation would move on. Mm-hmm. And my naive assumption was,
it's because I am right,
and I just taught them something.
Yeah.
But as I've grown up, I've noticed that. No, it's not that way. It's that the more you know about something, the more you realize that you don't know, that it's not clear. And so
that old Ashley Brilliant card. Right?
Yeah, so that's exactly what Miles is saying in this space, is that if you recognize the gray area and you say, ooh, that's a little sticky, I don't want to go there, and you don't go there, then someone with less awareness will forge that path instead and maybe make less conscious decisions.
And in tech, we think about very specific items like privacy. That's one where, and we've seen this on the web since its inception, where you have a whole lot of people that will take cookies and try to grab that and then sell that demographic information off to other retailers. Mm-hmm, and there's been a backlash about that. And what it came down to was, if you don't care, if you just want to do the business reason, if you just want to take the business case without any other considerations, you're going to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And but
until those darn ethical people start impinging on your fun.
Right. And But then you also have...
Sorry for laughing at the most inappropriate times today.
Right. And then you have the folks that are coming the other direction saying, like, no, this is totally unacceptable. We're going to take this moral high road of Adblock. Adblock is a plugin for the web browser, blocks ads. And that has been a great boon for a lot of people, and a lot of people just love it. And at the same time, a lot of these sites keep up by ad revenue. So there needs to be this give and take of how do you manage the site still being there versus having someone be intrusive into your life.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's ethics. The gray area, and that's why if you ever if you are a person of conscience, you must get in there. You must occupy that space.
All right. All right, Mr. Soapbox has spoken. So I wanted to talk about – so there's like a whole chain of events that have happened over the last week or so. I saw rattling around on Facebook – that's where I saw it links to Emma Watson's speech to the UN. She started a new initiative called He for She, where she's trying to encourage folks of the male gender to speak up on behalf of harassment and such that folks of the female gender are getting. Lovely. So there's that.
For their own sake, not just for women's sake.
Yeah.
It's for humanity's
because
sake.
A happy lady means happy everybody.
Well, she also talked about the fact that there are so many men who are afraid of being considered effeminate that they don't do things.
Yeah,
in addition to women who are considered non-feminine and therefore attacked.
Yeah.
Or rather, even if they are feminine, being attacked. That's a whole other...
The whole thing. But anyway, we'll link to the speech itself there. Then there was a thing on 4chan... that said, okay, Emma Watson, you know, you think you can speak up on behalf of the lady folk. Well, think again. We're going to release a bunch of nude photos. And it led to a site that was like EmmaYouAreNext.com or something. We'll have a link to that. Yeah. Not a link to that, but anyway.
God.
Yeah, EmmaYouAreNext.com. And so then after a few days of that, that site led to a viral marketing site called Rantic, which had done things like this before, other sort of sneaky campaigns like this. And then there was a link to a petition for Barack Obama to shut down 4chan.
So 4chan is where this allegedly started, right?
With
this
the
nude
iCloud.
Nude celebrities, pictures being released and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, 4chan is also a place where most memes that you probably see online... a vast majority of them showed up first on 4chan.
Yeah.
So
both the benign ones and also the really crufty ones.
Right. So they're the whole gamut. They are the pool that has been peed into.
Right. So now why, you know, you could think, well, all right, so Rantic doesn't want there to be naked pictures of females released, so they're getting people outraged by hopping onto something that was viral and popular already to bring awareness to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's one interpretation you could make.
Yeah.
Apparently, 4chan had maybe potentially hacked Rantic in the past, so maybe it's just personal revenge.
It also could be internet censorship because the whole idea of like, well, we should shut down 4chan, we should censor the internet. Those two are not necessarily too far apart from each other. They're conceptually the same thing. So conceivably, this could be some semi-anti net neutrality or some censorship or like within that vein. And that might be their justification.
Once you start getting to the area of controlling content, it becomes a, well, where else is content acceptable to curtail? You know, in other words, the first step may be, oh, we can all kind of agree on this is kind of a cesspool.
Yeah.
But, and I don't want to paint all of 4chan with this brush. It's very easy to do so.
Yeah.
But that's the argument that's being made, right?
Right. But if you take that away, suddenly becomes someone else gets into office, and then the choice becomes, oh, well, we don't want any of this LGBT stuff to come on there, so we're going to block that too. Oh, we don't want this.
Yeah, that seemed kind of related that way. Like, well, we're uncomfortable around the whole idea of LGBTQ issues, so because some of them are obscene and squick us out, we want the whole conversation to stop.
It seems that the issue is that it's... websites don't fall, like we were saying before, into black or white or good or bad. It's this this extremely complex, multidimensional spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And if you block something that's very, very clearly on one end of the spectrum as just, you know, like everyone can agree that this is bad, well, then you can just take that one inch step over to this other website, which is mostly bad. And it's a startlingly short road.
And let's not forget the whack-a-mole effect, which is
taking away the
site is not going to change everyone on that site's
ideas. Those
guys
know how to work
things.
They know how to make the internet go.
Right. Another site will pop up. What you need to do is actually attack the values that are being espoused, not the ability for it to be espoused.
And so I wonder how to do that. I mean, it reminded me a little bit of the political tactic of running a total goofball candidate under the opponent's party ticket to discredit that party or to make it so that party will lose later.
Huh.
Except, it's like throwing the thing you hate out there to stop the thing you hate.
Right. Unfortunately, politics is so polarized in our society, Poe's Law, which says that sufficiently dogmatic views are indistinguishable from satire.
Stephen Colbert.
Yeah, yeah. Really, it gets super easy to do the job at some point. Well, all right. So,
and the other thing is the whole bringing threatening Emma Watson part is
poor Emma Watson. If while all this was going on for some personal goal of for Rantic, mm-hmm. Emma Watson is thinking that nude photos of her are going to be released in a matter of days.
And for that matter, since we're talking about internet laws, we talk about Poe's Law being about satire. There's also Lewis's Law, which refers to. You have a whole bunch of vocal people saying that something is not an issue.
Yeah.
And so you have a person like Emma Watson talking about how feminism is an issue, how harassment of women and that type of patriarchal society is toxic, that you have a backlash of people saying, no, it isn't. This isn't a problem. And by the way, we're going to post nude photos of you, and you are, what's wrong with our society.
Then all she has to do is jerk her thumb over and then go, see, guys?
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about.
The backlash to your message is proof that your message is valid.
Yeah, yeah. It's so interesting because it's all kind of wadded up there in this one chain of events. Is that what you were going to say about Emma Watson?
Oh, I just wanted to use the word deplorable in a sentence. It's just disgusting.
Yeah.
It's absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
I think. So I there's nothing about this story that makes me happy in any way whatsoever.
No, it's gross and gross.
We've had listeners email in saying, why do you keep talking about women's issues? And you know what? I would love to stop talking about it. And the way
for it to not be relevant in society,
right.
There's a problem.
But every time we talk about it and someone says, why do you always bring this stuff up? It's not really relevant. Yeah, you've totally shown me that I need to talk about it more.
That's kind of the Joss Whedon argument, right?
Right.
When that question was asked of him, why do you keep writing, why are you so obsessed with strong female characters? Because of that question.
Because you keep asking me that, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good. All right. Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about it again, too, sadly.
Mm.
Should we do a little palate cleanser? Let's have something on a totally different topic.
I've got something that's 100% different from that.
Okay, good. I need a chaser. What do you got?
Which is that PayPal today, I'm sorry, starting to read the article. PayPal on the 23rd, that is, announced partnerships with BitPay, Coinbase, and GoCoin, which are all Bitcoin payment processors.
Oh.
So PayPal will be, in a somewhat roundabout way,
Bitcoin
accepting
friendly?
Bitcoin friendly. Now they won't actually be processing the payments directly in with Bitcoins and everything. They're dealing with this through payment processors. The payment processors, Coinbase or BitPay or GoCoin, those are the people who are going to be dealing with the Bitcoin to dollar conversion and all of those issues there.
Right, and let's also be clear that these organizations that you're talking about, they're the equivalent in the Bitcoin realm of your Visa or your MasterCard or the like. It's that easy access to be able to get the money transfer to go through. You don't necessarily – yes, they are doing a conversion from dollars to – like, but the idea is that you're just able to say, hey, swipe a card, this goes, and the transaction just happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just make that part happen. Just boom.
Okay. But that way you can use PayPal and your Bitcoin.
Right, and then you pay them in Bitcoins. Yeah.
Okay.
Which is pretty awesome. Like, this makes me really happy. I'd love to see Bitcoin continue to get publicity and then eventually to actually take off as a really legitimate currency, not just something that people use as for futures trading and things.
Yeah. Which does have that concern of what happens if Bitcoin does take off and becomes a currency that becomes
a base. If it's not a sweet, quaint little alternative currency, but a real force
right.
in the economy.
And the dollar no longer becomes a reserve currency.
Dun, dun, dun. We've got a few days right before that happens. We've got a little bit of time.
Well, a bit more than that. But at the same time, it's that question of, you know, what would happen,
what would
because
take?
A lot of the U.S. economy is also based upon that. And that's where weakness in other economies shows up, is that they get debt in our dollars. Whereas if we get debt in our dollars, it's like, oh, well, just we can print some more money.
Yeah, but isn't all our debt Chinese debt?
Yeah, I like... Nope. I like
as
one.
Matter of fact, it isn't.
Oh, okay, good.
I like one particular sentence from this article, which is up at geekspeak.org. It says, in short, PayPal is asking others to dip their toes into Bitcoin, not to jump in necessarily, but
yeah.
You know, like let's actually take this a little bit more seriously than just something that the news is reporting on. And so, yeah, that makes me really happy.
That's good. PayPal is making Bitcoin easier to use, and it sounds like Intel is making 3D scanners easier to use.
Yes, indeed. In fact, putting 3D scanners into tablets. So imagine you have a tablet, and in the future, perhaps even phones, where instead of taking a photo of something and then you have it, that you're able to, you know, move your device around an object.
Mm-hmm.
It will scan it, make a 3D model of it, and then you pass it to your 3D printer.
Nice. So is that, I mean, when I think about where the bottlenecks are in 3D printing, copyright was an issue of some kind, and we passed that hurdle. Although, as I say that, I have no information to back that up or understand the context for why I said it. But I had heard that there had been some sort of like, no, that's ours, you can't play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been broadened up a bit. And so now making it easier to map the objects that you'd like to print.
Mm-hmm.
Is happening.
But, and in the distant future, in a galaxy far, far away,
mm-hmm.
there's also the thing we've gotten used to from watching the Star Wars movies of the hologram that shows you, you know, as you're talking to them, it's actually a 3D model that's projected on top of a pedestal.
Oh, yeah.
That becomes more of a possibility when you have 3D scanning technology to be able to figure out what are the curves and contours.
To reproduce holographic images, potentially.
Yes.
Although, everyone uses the word hologram so lightly.
Right.
Yeah.
A hologram is a spinning mirror. Whatever you see holograms on stage, like some person joins blah, 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 and who on stage, that's not a hologram.
Right.
That's not a laser-produced image.
It's a 3D projection.
It is not.
Well, I mean,
it
like
is not.
Within digital space, like in post-processing, it's...
It is. I don't even think that. I mean, there are different techniques and everything, but none of them... if you see the word hologram in the context of any kind of entertainment... It is not a hologram. It is a thing that
we
are
calling holograms. My little
debate.
Little pocket holograms would be quite entertaining. Sorry, Ed.
I like those lenticulars. All right. Anyway, and there's been some space news.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff. Wait, didn't Virgin Airlines, Virgin Space? What's the name?
Virgin Galactic.
Virgin Galactic. Aren't they planning on starting space flights like in 2016?
Yeah, like low Earth orbit, I think.
So that's exciting. That's happening. And also Russia's
decided
in our territory.
They're going to the moon.
What?
Yeah.
I thought we were giving up on manned flights. Is that just in the
U.S.?
On people
manned
showing up
flights?
on a space. Oh, no, we're trying to get someone on an asteroid. Isn't that what we're up to?
We're about to land a craft on an asteroid.
On a comet, yeah.
A comet, sorry.
But we're not doing any land flights to that comet?
I don't think we're dropping a person.
Can't
there
I
right
successfully
now
spread a rumor about our U.S. space goals? All right.
Not successfully.
And, no, apparently not.
And congratulations to India for having a Mars mission.
Ooh, that's right.
That is awesome, too.
For less money than it costs to make the film Gravity.
Whoa!
Oh, I love it. I love it.
But at the same time, and this is not to say that NASA should do the same thing, I'm glad that NASA spends more money than that because this is... NASA creates instruments that weigh more because they're going to last longer and do more experiments, whereas the Indian probe had a much smaller payload.
Yeah.
And isn't expected to last as long. But it's still nice to see that we have this gamut and, you know, welcome India to the Mars race.
Well, now, do we feel the same way about Russia? Welcome Mars?
I have no problem with it. Welcome yeah, to... I think they should go to the moon. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Why
we
not?
We should have a moon base. We should have had a moon base already.
I know, but now are they going to have it? Oh.
Well, we planted the flag first, and we all know that that's how
with Russia is what got us to the moon in the first place. So, hey, bring the competition.
Awesome.
It's back. All right. Competition is back. Healthy competition. Well, you've done it. You've listened to Geek Speak for an hour now. Congratulations. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission. And Geek Speak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. So use our stuff any way you like. Just tell them the geeks say hi. This is Public Radio for the Central Coast, 88.9 KUSP Santa Cruz, live online at KUSP.org. To find out more about this or any episode of Geek Speak, please visit geekspeak.org. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch. For Miles and Ben, thank you for being here for our September 27th, 2014 episode.